irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, August 25th, and we're here back to entertain you.
We are.
And I decided today not to bring up any politics, any negative news.
Okay.
Okay. After a day of a downer.
Yeah. Our doomsday show.
Yeah. So I figured, I can't necessarily find happy news, but not necessarily depressing news. So
yeah.
You kind of find something, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But I need to find a place where I figured maybe like in People Magazine's website or something, I might find.
You mean like tabloids?
Or something like that. Yeah. To find out about celebrities and stuff.
Okay. So instead of like listening to the world get torn down, let's tear down celebrities.
Exactly. You know, and find out what the hell is going on with them, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It's usually not as bad as the news, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I can't stop watching the news. I can't. Everywhere you go, it's right in front of you, you know?
I know.
So
I think whether you're tearing down the world or tearing down news, I think a negative mindset's a negative mindset.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's the same brain chemicals.
Yeah.
Just maybe not as many.
Right. But it's not like I pursue it. It's just there in front of me, you know?
I mean,
I spend way too much time on Facebook. And
Facebook's the worst place.
It really is, you know?
It's terrible.
And then, you know, on iPads and iPhones, you get the news, news notifications and things like that.
Yeah. You can turn those off.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I should.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the Citizen app, so I hear about stabbings and machetes and all the really crazy stuff that's happening around.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Tell us about this app. I never heard of it
before.
Okay,
so it's called Citizen, and people, the citizens on the street, are the ones that are, kind of notifying everybody. So you go on the app. I'm showing Sam. I'm sorry you all can't see this.
Right.
So it looks like that. And then let's see. Police activity on West Pico Boulevard and Dewey Ave. Report of person injured with assault weapon on Melrose and North Plymouth. Two people making threats at a Chase Bank on Sunset. Every week there's a woman with a machete.
Really?
I promise you, every week there's a woman with a machete.
Wow.
The other day someone was firing guns out of a Jaguar downtown somewhere.
Uh-huh. Now, why do you need to know these things? Why do you have to have Citizen on your phone?
I don't know. I mean, someone told me about it and they said it's kind of fun sometimes. And I don't look at it all the time. Like, I'll see the notifications, they come up, and I can just kind of glance at them and look away. But a couple months ago, we had this huge thing right outside of my building. Like, my roommate and I just sat in the window and watched it. But there was about 50 police cars and a dozen SWAT vehicles.
Wow.
And they had helicopters and they literally pulled everyone to come join this situation. And there was a guy on a rooftop that I think was like on drugs maybe, and they thought he had a weapon on him. And so we were able to watch it from the window and then watch the roof action on the Citizen app, which was kind of fun. but they had people like lined up with all their weapons drawn, and
wow,
it was kind of crazy. I was like, we probably shouldn't be sitting by the window.
Pretty high, right?
Seventh floor. Yeah, it's not high enough to.
Yeah, you're not gonna get a bullet up there.
Yeah, hope not.
A stray one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. Actually.
Yeah, you never know. If they're shooting at a roof, you don't know what could ricochet
right
from that angle. So
I sometimes wonder where the bullets go when people just shoot to the sky. You know, like during celebrations and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like, where does a bullet go? It falls somewhere.
It falls somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. It probably falls fast and hot.
Right.
Too.
Pretty accelerated. And stuff,
yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. In somebody's head.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I know. I always wonder that when things like explode in space,
right,
and like bits and pieces fall down. Like,
I know.
And they come through our atmosphere. Like, where are they landing? Like, where is that?
I know.
You know? So.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this brings up this story about a woman in Ohio. at a theme park. I guess the roller coaster, a piece of it broke off, and it hit the woman that was standing in line, and now she's fighting for her life. So, I mean, we've been seeing a lot of stories on roller coasters, right? Breaking down and shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 'tis the season.
Yeah, but, you know.
It's the season for it.
Yeah, but to fall apart, you know.
These things
are like, you know. That's why I'm not getting on one anymore, man. It's just, it's enough.
I don't love them.
Yeah.
I've never loved them. And I did a day of roller coasters with my siblings once out of being shamed horribly for not doing it. They decided to take me, I think, to like Dorney Park or Six Flags or something for my birthday one year. I think I was like 19 or 20. And I was like, I'm just warning you guys, I'm not going on the rides. If you want to go there, if you want to take me to a place where I'm not going to ride the rides for my birthday, we can go. I'm like, I'm happy doing little rides, but I'm not going to go on the big roller coasters with you. And they were like, yeah. And then we get there the day of, and they're like, we took you all the way out here for your birthday.
Yeah,
and you're not
like
even going to ride
right?
the rides. Yeah, totally. So they guilted me into it. And I remember walking up to, I think it was the Superman ride or something, and you like you have to go up this entire like mountain right. indoors, and you're just waiting forever. And then finally we get in the area where they're like launching it, and they're like 3, 2, 1, and the whole thing goes 0 to 60, just launches right out of the gate. And I was like, oh no, I can't do this. Absolutely not. I was like shaking. I was like, no. But I ended up doing it, and that one was actually pretty fun. But
yeah.
not again.
I know, man. One time I went on a roller coaster, and after we got off, I realized I didn't have my wallet on me.
Oh no!
And I was so irritated. And then it came back after the second time, and the wallet was right there. You know, I told the people. I said I must have left it here. It must have fell, and it was on the seat.
That's funny.
Isn't that something?
Oh,
and it
man.
Stayed there the whole ride, because it was right after I got off, you know?
Yeah.
So.
That's funny.
Right? And it slipped out of my
pocket.
It
wasn't even buckled
Never
in.
Never happened to me or anything, you know? No, it wasn't buckled in. And nobody was sitting on there either.
Wow.
I know.
I like the little ones like Space Mountain. I think that's fun. Tower of Terror is, I'm going to throw up.
Tower of Terror.
That's the one
is
that just
free
goes
fall?
Up and then drops. Yeah, I'm not a free fall gal.
I know. That's pretty scary stuff, man.
And the thing is different because I've skydived before, and that doesn't feel like a free fall because you're not like inside of something. You know,
right.
gravity feels different when you're inside of something versus an actual free fall in the air, right? When you're in something, like it's a controlled space in a way.
Right.
Versus when you're falling out of the sky, it feels like there's like a big fan under you kind of holding you up.
Right.
You don't feel the drop.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What did it feel like? I mean, were you scared at all?
You know, the decision to do it, I was living in Florida with my best friend, and her and our other friend decided to do it. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then I was like, you know, I'm kind of like Disney paid crap money. So I kind of didn't have the finances at the time. And my friend the morning of was like, I can't let you miss this opportunity. I'm just going to pay for it, and you can pay me back whenever you can. And I was like, okay, fine. And like, I'm a big weenie with all that stuff. So the fact that I was just like, okay, I just like didn't have time to let it set in that it was happening. So it just didn't feel like a reality, right? And so
right.
we get to the place, and you're sitting in this room signing this waiver that if you die, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
And you're watching these like videos in the waiting room of people doing all their free falls, and then they bring you out back. And they start strapping you up and putting a harness on you, and you see all the people landing, and everyone's got like snot running out of their nose to the back of their face because all the gravity just pulls it out.
Really?
Like everyone had snot
really?
Everywhere. Yeah. That's something that they never tell you. And so we get on a little plane, which is also not on brand for me because I just feel like everyone dies in a little plane.
Yeah.
And you get in this plane, and they have two benches going long ways, one on each side. And it was my friend, myself, and our other friend. And then there were just other people that worked there that just go up for the hell of diving down.
Right.
And you're literally going straight up, like you're completely like nose up. And then the moment I did get a little nervous is when I felt the plane level out, because I was like, oh, this is our stop.
Yeah,
you know, this is where we get off. It was 18,000 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they just opened the door, and the people who came up just for the ride just dove right on out. And the person I was, my tandem jumper, just looked at me and was like, do you want to go first? And I was like, okay.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah. So we're standing in like the doorway, right? And the wind's like blowing like crazy. And he's like, all right, ready? I'm like, sure. And he just jumps. And there's this, the first few seconds that your feet are no longer on a surface.
Uh-huh.
Your brain can't even compute it. Like your brain just feels like it's tumbling around inside your head, confused. Like it's a little discombobulating at first.
Right.
And it didn't help that he kept tumbling, and I started smacking him. Yeah, I was like, stop spinning.
I know, they love doing that.
Yeah, I was like, stop spinning. I'm going to throw up on you. So he finally stopped spinning and just let us coast and enjoy.
You can actually talk when all the air is like,
yeah,
going inside your mouth and everything. Wow.
Totally. And they're like right by your, they're next to your face.
Right.
You know, they're completely flat up against you. So,
right.
Yeah, once we started coasting, it was really nice. It was like maybe like four or five minutes of coasting before we pulled the chute.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I would never put my life in a little bag that has to open into a parachute, you know?
Yeah.
It just, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just too much chance for it not to work.
They send an additional person with you that will film the whole thing.
Right.
And that guy, his first two chutes didn't open.
Wow.
And his third chute finally opened. But really? When he landed, he was ghost white. He was absolutely terrified.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So there's like three parachutes?
Three, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes it a little safer, I guess.
I guess, yeah. But they have to be packed perfectly.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And when you're like, you're attached to the other guy, you guys only have one parachute that opens, right?
Yeah.
It's not like two or anything. I mean, where are they going to go?
Right.
Yeah.
Because it couldn't open between us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It has to go on their back.
Right. Jeez.
So, I mean, I could also be like set up by somebody who hates me and they could just have them like detach from me in the sky.
Right. Well, we have a guest calling in. I forgot
to totally
say we're going to have a guest.
Yes.
But we do have one, and we're going to take it right now. We're waiting for a call from Doc Farrow. Doc, are you with us?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing great. We're Sam and
other
Jen.
Than talking about the missteps of skydiving.
Yeah, there you go. Did you ever get to skydive?
Last May, I actually went and got my license. I am a Class B skydiver.
Oh wow!
Wow.
You were in the Navy though. Did you ever jump when you were in the military?
No, I didn't. Those are the most of the guys that go through that school are Special Forces, Navy SEALs, Recon, Special Forces. Very rarely does someone else get to go to that school.
Oh.
I didn't get a chance to go be in Special Forces or Navy SEALs, which is one of the reasons why I joined the military. But yeah, no, I didn't start jumping until 4 months ago.
How many jumps did you have to do to get your license?
It's 25 jumps. There's some things that you have to do to be proficient in jumping to make sure, you don't die. There's a few things you have to do, but technically after 8 jumps, you can jump by yourself. And after 25 with, you know, checking in the box and doing the ground school and taking the test, you can get your Class A skydiving license. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Very cool. And I would imagine you've got all the courage in the world, so you're not worried about being afraid. You've seen a lot worse, I'm sure.
You know, courage was a year before I started jumping.
Yeah.
And then they were asking me, you know, when you get in the plane, they go, are you sure you want to go? And I said, you know, I've already given you bitches all my money, so it's happening. So there was no reason for courage once I got in the plane. But I'll tell you, is that once I stepped out of the plane, and Jen, I just heard you talking about your brain can't handle it. Everything that I thought I knew about through my own experiences about planes, falling, jumping, And the laws of physics just go straight out the window as soon as you step out of the plane.
Yeah.
And it's a brand new experience that your mind can't wrap around. So it automatically just lets go. And that's what happened to me. I wish I actually watched a video after I started skydiving. I wish that I could have said it better. But Will Smith had said the same thing. And then he said, there's a reason why God put the greatest joy on the other side of our worst fears. Mm. And, you know, after 55 jumps, I never get tired of it. I still have to breathe when I, you know, make sure that I breathe when I go up there. But as soon as I jump out, it's always a brand new experience of learning something new.
Mm. Wow. Sounds interesting to me now.
I don't know if you get this, but after I did I've only done one jump. And after I did it, I had like a high off it for probably close to a week.
Yeah, I could say the same. I was planning on getting my license before I did my first tandem. Mm. So I did two tandems in a day because that's what I had to do to get my license. So for me, it was an end of the year goal that I happened to do in 4 months. And it was something that I said I was going to do. It wasn't just a bucket list thing for me. Mm. So I was high and I did most of my first jumps, the first 28 jumps I did in less than a week or about a week. Oh, so wow. I was continuously high, even though my knees did not want me to have anything to do with it. I was continuously high for a while. But yeah, you just kind of, it's one of those things where it's an experience that you cannot reference anything prior to this.
Yeah.
And I just stayed on this cloud for quite some time. And now it's about, how do I get better? You know, it's not just falling out of the sky. There's things to work on to make sure that I get better at it being an extreme sport. So it's always refreshing to learn and keep learning and reinforcing good habits when I'm jumping and getting better at it after. So
right, yeah. Mm. Would you ever do that bodysuit thing? You know, where you fly like
the one that looks like a flying squirrel.
The wingsuit. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Would you do something like that?
that's the end goal.
Really?
In order to do the wingsuits, I have to be a C licensed skydiver and have at least 200 jumps before I can even start training on that. But that's kind of the end goal, the last, you know, obtaining goal for me when it comes to this particular sport. Yeah,
right.
That was what I was thinking about before I started. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You're a man's man, let me tell you, Doc.
Well, you know, I just decided to do it, so I did it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm in L.A. I'm up in San Fernando Valley. Mm.
I see. Well, that's where we are. Maybe next time you can come in here. In fact, Catherine asked me to, and I was kind of like unsure because of COVID and everything. We sort of like... you know, but yeah, okay. So you're local to us. Very cool. Did you grow up here?
I was going to say, as a matter of fact, a good comedian friend of mine, Sandy Stotzer, Billy Betts. I used to come into. I don't know if you guys are still on Coldwater Canyon. Coldwater Canyon or Woodman?
Yeah, we were on Woodman, but that was a long time ago. Yeah, but you're right. They were on the station. Yeah.
Yeah, 2013, 2014 maybe.
Oh, wow. So that was some time ago. Wow, very cool. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
So let's get a little bit into the reason you're calling. You are in a movie. You act in it and you wrote it. And it's called Saved Rounds. Now, you, like I mentioned, you were in the U.S. Navy. When did you serve?
I went in 1998 and I got out in 2005. I was in Okinawa, Japan for 2 years, working in the ER over there at the Camp Lester base, and that rotated over to 29 Palms, which is, I think, the armpit of God's asshole as far as living.
That's a good description.
It's just miserable.
Really?
And, you know, but it's the largest desert training warfare center on the planet. So everybody goes there to train for that type of warfare, which will be the warfare that we go through for quite some time. So I was stationed there with 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, and then still with 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. And I went over to Iraq twice, once in 2003 for shock and awe,
Yeah.
And then in 2004 for Fallujah.
Wow. So you've seen combat firsthand.
Yes. Wow. A couple times.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we got to thank you deeply for protecting us and serving the country. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how you react to what's going on in Afghanistan, but you can probably empathize with the stuff that people go through there right now, right?
You know, I tell people that it's complicated,
right?
Not only complicated because of what I don't know as far as what's going on. And I don't stay completely up on geopolitical issues,
right.
But it's complicated as far as my soul is concerned. My feelings are complicated.
Right.
And the way that I've been able to process these things for the last, 16 years since I've been out,
yeah,
is that those decisions are above my pay grade.
Right.
These are things that are outside of my control. If I get too hung up in those things, I can get really upset fast.
Yeah.
I was just talking to a friend of mine this morning, who served with me, who is having the same issue. And there's a fair amount of frustration and anger that goes on with us and including myself.
Right.
But it's complicated in the fact that I don't have any control of why I went or who I was going for and why people sent me.
Right.
And since I don't have any control over that, I also don't have a control over what decisions are made as far as why we're not still there or when we come back or what happens to places that are not finished with what we were supposed to be doing.
Right.
That being said, my experiences were very real. The people I served with were very real. I am always and will continue to be honored with the men and women that I served with, and the people and the experiences, both hell and heaven, that I experienced going over there. Everything else is something that's outside of my control. Politics are going to always be politics. People are going to play their games. I was a part of those games just simply because of the nature of what I was doing. But the individual experiences, my time there, they can never take that away from me.
Right.
I get real emotional about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can never take that away from me, no matter what they decide to do at a level that is greater than what I can have control over.
Yeah.
My men, my Marines, my corpsmen, we all served with honor. We all did something for each other and for this country that can never be taken away, no matter how much somebody else may be erasing it in the mind's eye of the community.
True. Yeah.
That's what I have to say about that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that are saying that all the work and all the service that people did over there is worth nothing because of, how everything's happening. And I understand why they might feel that way. But I feel like so much was sacrificed and so much good was done for whatever period of time that, it's not for nothing. And I think it's absolutely worth something.
Since I've been out and being able to and getting lots of different perspective on life, and through lots of therapy as well, through PTSD therapy and so forth and so on,
right.
There is a balance in everything that happens in this universe that I have no idea of how far reaching it is. I can look at it from outside and say, yes, we were sent over there and we're being brought back by mistake and for no reason and for oil and for whatever it is that somebody else may think it was. But since time has passed and since that was a time and chapter in my life, it was something that I experienced, and it's something that's made me who I am today. And I'm never going to be ashamed of who I am right now.
Right.
And if my experiences make me who I am, then I have to be able to weed through a lot of the stuff that I dislike about or I disagree with in my past, especially the things that are outside of my control.
Right.
And I have to go, this is what happened. I still have friendships with people that I would have never met. And we walk each other through different problems that we would have never experienced had we not been there together.
Right.
There are situations and there are experiences that I will never, ever let go of. I will never not cherish. And there's a whole bunch of pain and trauma that I will hold on to as well, because if I can stay in touch with it, then I can help someone else walk through it myself, because no one else is going to be able to say this is what you're going through until you've been through it yourself. Yeah. So in this regard, I don't, it's very hard for me to listen to the what I call the talking heads on the news, or people who have an outside opinion of a very deep and internal and precious thing that I and a few other people have experienced. Right. I honestly, it's not that I don't want to hear it, but I have to say that I take it with a very small grain of salt. Not saying that other people's perspectives are not worthy. I'm saying that right now in my life, I'm boxing. Right. If you want to tell me about Tai Chi, great. If you want to tell me how Tai Chi applies to boxing or what boxing is based on your Tai Chi experience, I don't have anything to gain from you because you haven't boxed.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Okay. So I think it's complicated. It's fluid. It's open. It's wide. And everybody has a place. But this is our place. And that's what's happening for me.
Right.
I also think it's really cool that, you know, despite everything, that you are doing the work to get help and treat and working through everything. So I think that's really cool.
Let's get to the film Saved Rounds. You wrote the film and you act in it. Tell us briefly what the movie is about.
So the movie is about a corpsman, i.e. what I went through. Me, a corpsman is the medical personnel for Marines.
Uh-huh.
Where Army has medics and the Air Force has medics, we're corpsmen. So the Marines don't have their own medical personnel, so we get attached to them. We eat, breathe, sleep. Everything we do is with the Marines. So whatever they're going through, we're going through with them. And because of that, not just corpsmen, medics, as far as the Army's concerned, the same thing. Their medics do everything with their grunts. And the one of the things that I have not seen overly saturated in the industry is that bond or that relationship between corpsmen and Marines. That is forged through combat and training and just being with each other for that extended period of time. I thought about my own experiences and some of the things that I walked away from. And I reached out to a friend of mine. Her name is Deborah Leonhardt, who plays opposite me in that movie. And I said, you know what? Let's just shoot something. Let's just make this movie. And this is what I've got to offer. And we created it together. Mm-hmm. And it's about... one of the things that I found since I've been out is that there is an interesting and researched and palatable difference in survivor's guilt when it comes to the military between other people that go and may experience PTSD from being in combat. And specifically, chaplains go through a certain version of that. And corpsmen and medics go through a brand new version of PTSD because of the nature of the relationship between corpsmen, medics, and soldiers and Marines.
Right.
We carry them with us much longer because our job is to bring everyone back alive, bring everyone back safe, to fix you, to heal you, to patch you up and bring you back together. And no matter what happens with the mission or with combat, that is one thing that can never always come be completed. And because of that, and this is something else that I've been talking, that I talk with my therapist about all the time, because of that, then we have a special brand of survivor's guilt where we never really fully bring the people that were left there back with us. They're always with us and we're always feeling this brand of survivor's guilt as to why we didn't bring them back. So this story is about that. This story is about a doc who is in, uh-huh. who is, that's his name in the film,
uh-huh.
who is, you know, he hasn't come back yet. He's drunk. He's irritable. He's discontent. He has been floating through life, trying to just forget until he gets visited by one of his Marines that didn't come back and visited, meaning the ghost of him, comes and basically with the special relationship that comes between Marines, that camaraderie, that witty banter, that dark humor, he just starts messing with them and basically says, "Hey, you've made a promise to me that if I died, you would deliver a message to my family just as he did promise to him." And this is direct experience for me, because I did make that promise with someone else who I went and served with, as they didn't make it for me. And so he didn't, because he couldn't handle it. And now he's basically, he can't find freedom. He can't find that peace, or what one of my writers called a balm in Gilead, which is referred to in the Bible. He could not find that peace until he does what he said he was going to do. And in doing so, it would have automatically been a place of letting go, of coming to grips with that experience, coming to grips with his past. So they basically go on a journey, and he has a person who is the bartender at the bar that he goes to all the time and drinks, and that's his only friend. Right. They're not really, I mean, he's not really good at relationships, and obviously, you know, he has some, social problems as far as being able to communicate with the outside world. But he basically pulls her in on this and not telling her what's going on. And he's basically asking her to trust him, because he can't do this by himself. He doesn't even know what's going on, other than he's got to go do this thing. So as they go on this journey and meeting up with the family, the first time that he's meeting with the family since he's been out, and you know, the relationship was so strong between these two guys that the family was his family as well. You know, they spent all their time on leave together. They were in each other's lives to the point where the family felt that they were losing two sons by one being gone as well.
Right.
And, you know, they find, or that's the journey, that's the crux of this piece, is finding peace by not only walking through those old wounds that we just keep covering up without actually healing. And as we keep covering these things up, it just means that the scab is going to be that much harder to pull off when we do finally go towards it. And, you know, he runs into some bumps, he runs into some things, but it ultimately he has to find peace, and he has to be able to give this message. And in the message itself is the message of peace for himself. And all three of them get to, all, well, five people in the cast, they all get to find some kind of healing, not perfect bow ending, which I kind of hate, you know, to project, but they all find peace. They all find some healing by driving towards what is compelling them to deal with the past in some sort of way. Lori, who is played by Deborah, she finds some peace in trusting this process. And by the way, Lori is in the film is a dependent of a Marine who had died before. And I will always say this, is that Deborah, who was my writing partner and played Lori, she actually was a dependent of a Marine who is my hero. Deborah is my hero. One of my heroes, because as we were shooting this, her father was actually dying of cancer, of complications of Agent Orange from Vietnam.
Really?
And that was the onus on us as far as making this, is that we actually got a chance to get a rough cut of this to show it to him before he died. So he did get a chance to see not only his daughter act, but see the story that the love letter that we were kind of writing to him as well in this process, because he served in Vietnam for 3 years,
right,
as did my father as well.
Right.
So you guys got
a chance to actually relive some of the things that you actually went through making
the
movie.
That's why it took me 3 years to make it.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to let go of some of that. And as I'm walking through it, and it was very painful for me to shoot, although I knew that I had to. I knew that I had to, and I knew that it was supposed to happen just because the way everything had lined up for it to happen. But the response that I'm getting from people who served in the military, my only, or our only goal was that the people who are watching it will find the same healing that we did making it. And I checked with a few of the Gold Star wives that I know, and I said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And you guys are just as much a part of it. And I asked for your blessing for this. And they got a chance to read the script, and I got their blessing. And the people who are in the in this film are not, well, two of us are actual veterans who, the one who plays Rod is a veteran who actually was on 29 Palms, very not too far away from where I was, just a different time. And Deborah being a dependent, we really wanted to make sure that we touched upon every aspect of this experience that we that everybody kind of goes through when one person goes into the military. It's not just about me being over there and experiencing things or being upset about the outcomes. It's about, there's something that the people who are back here lose as a part of that. And not only do I become a different person, but the relationship between the people who watch their sons and daughters go to war, that changes, and that's to be honored and to be respected and understood. And we tried our best to attach or to approach all aspects of this as best we could. Our director, John Finn, who is a veteran as well, and a veteran actor, he's been around this business for a while. He brought so much to this as he was helping us to tell the story, his expertise and his being able to craft this as well was priceless. It was very wonderful to have his mind behind this and being able to bring about a crew who respected the work and respected the story. Not all of us were veterans that were on this set, and we wanted we found that the story was powerful enough. It was powerful enough for me, and that's all it had to be. But it was powerful enough for them to say, "This is something special here," and my only goal was to get it out to the people who could use it, because I know how much I needed it for me.
Right.
But as I was showing this to some of my Marines and sailors that I served with, I found out how much that our stories are not not unique. This is what we go through, and this is what we survive, and this is what we are here for, to help the next person go through. And that's the onus of myself, or the life that I'm living. It's also the onus of a storyteller, period, to be able to walk through these experiences, to pass it on, to convey those feelings onto the next person.
Right. It's got to be really
healing. I'm blessed because I get a chance to do this in two realms,
right.
One with an old career and one with a new career. And it was just a blessed experience all the way around. Painful, but still
right.
So wonderful and blessed.
Right.
Yeah.
Cathartic as well, probably.
Yeah, that's
got
to be really healing. Absolutely. To be able to bring your idea to fruition creatively,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Doc Farrow, the film is Saved Rounds. If people want to see it, I know it's going to be at a festival, Bronze Lens, I guess, festival.
Yeah, it was in Bronze Lens this last week.
Oh, okay.
There was a lot of great work in there, and we're so grateful to be able to be in so many film festivals. Right now, as it sits, we won't be in another film festival until late September or October, but we're not really releasing it just yet until we get it through the film festivals. But please follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Saved Rounds. On Twitter, it's Saved Rounds One, the number one.
Uh-huh.
You can always follow me, J Doc Farrow, everywhere, and we'll always keep you up. We're going to be releasing it. I wanted to make sure that that we can get it to film festivals first, and that only military people that I wanted to make sure got a chance to see this, because of how much it touched myself and the people around me that I served with. I want to make sure that certain people have access to it. But as far as really opening up and releasing it, it probably won't be until November.
I see.
But
okay.
Please follow us. We're always going to be going and moving and let you know what's going on.
Yeah, I would love to see the movie. I mean, it really touches a lot of emotions, I think, and that's what a movie should do, you know. Do you have any personal social media? Do you want people to find you, or only through Saved Ground?
Oh, sure. J. Doc Farrow, J-D-O-C-F-A-R-R-O-W. That's on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm usually posting about, you know, I'm on the TV show Young Sheldon, and I should be going back in the shoot next week. So I'm usually posting about that. I've been boxing and skydiving and doing a whole bunch of other things
so
as
fun.
Well. So we're getting ready for the next thing as far as writing is concerned. My production company, Doc's Office Production, is always getting ready for the next thing. And with Young Sheldon and Save Round still, you know, still still out there doing things, you know, I've always got stuff going on. So please, yeah. Hit me up, and then you'll always know what's happening.
Definitely.
Excellent.
Thank you so much. And
thanks, Doc.
Thanks, and much continued success to you. You definitely have a fascinating life, you know, doing all these things and jumping off planes and boxing and all that.
I highly recommend
it, Sam. More than I'll ever do in my life.
Well, I really appreciate you asking me to be on, and I will tell you that my father – had a phrase that he would say. I would tell him, he would tell me that he's on borrowed time. And that is, that's the way I just look at things. I'm on borrowed time.
Right.
I don't know how long I was supposed to live, but I'm still alive. And I don't plan to die quietly. I'm just going to keep doing whatever's the next thing on my plate until the wheels have rode off and I'm out of here. So,
that's the attitude to have.
Yes.
All right, Doc. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
And all the best to you, really. Much success
with
the film.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Yeah, some of the stories, huh? That people come back with, man. Yeah. It's they call it veteran survivor's guilt. Survivor's guilt.
Survivor's guilt, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's pretty heavy stuff, you know?
Heavy stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Additionally, if you have a hard time finding him or you don't remember what he said, I have posted on my story, the official Jen B on Instagram. You can find a link to both the radio show and to Doc's page on there.
Sounds good. The official Jen B.
The official
Not
Jen B.
Not just any Jen B, but the official
one. The official one.
I like that. Yeah. It's pretty cool. A couple things that we should mention is, did you hear that Charlie Watts, the Rolling Stones drummer, died?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, at the age of 80, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
80. And
I feel like they were just in their 20s and 30s, 20 years ago.
Right?
Like the 80s in my brain was 20 years ago.
They've been performing for 60 years.
A good run.
It is. I mean, when you think the Beatles were only around for 4 years. Then the Stones have really done a body of work, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're still performing in their 70s and 80s, you know.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, when you think of an 80-year-old person, you don't think of them singing like Mick Jagger,
out.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and rocking.
Just fully jamming.
I know. Or Keith Richard with his drugs and cigarettes and everything, and he's still alive.
I mean, people are themselves. They don't become this, Mr. Rogers type person just because they get older, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and they don't retire either. I mean, you know, when it's something you love to do, you keep doing it, you know.
Yeah, that's where I hope to be.
Yeah. Huh?
I mean, not a raging musician, but in film
or
something.
Raging actress or producer or something. He'd been married for 57 years to the same woman.
I can't even imagine.
Right? Being with the same person.
Yeah, I'll be like, oh, that guy's hot. And then 20 minutes later, I'm like, never mind. I changed my mind so quickly.
Right. Well, obviously, it's not just about being hot. But
no, of course not.
You know, 57 years is a long time.
I know, but if I can't get past the first 20 minutes,
right.
That's my point.
No, that's true, you know. But when you think about it, I mean, he's part of the Rolling Stones. He must have had so many girls throwing themselves at him. You
know? He's had the pick. He's had quite a variety to choose from.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's not like he's like, okay, who's here at Whole Foods?
Right, exactly. You know?
He is global choice.
Right. So so you can admire him for that. And he died in the UK.
What from?
I don't know, but... I don't know what it was.
Also, did you know the UK still has restrictions on age as to who can get the vaccine?
Oh, really?
Isn't that crazy? I'm so, like, you guys are behind.
Really? What kind of limit do they have?
I don't know which age group, but certain age groups still can't get it. And they're also doing 12 weeks between the shot.
Oh, yeah?
That's like 3 months.
Well, maybe they know something we don't, you know?
I know, but I'd forget.
Yeah. Do you remember the Nirvana album cover with the baby?
Yes, I read about that this morning. That guy's suing Nirvana.
Right. Kurt Cobain's estate.
Yes, because...
He's suing them because he claims it was child pornography.
Right. For anyone that doesn't know, the cover of one of the Nirvana albums has a baby floating in water completely naked, and you can see his little pee-pee.
Right.
Yeah.
So the guy that is now 30 years old, he says it's really affected him and screwed up his life. Now, you know, we can't sit here and be judges, but what... I mean, how could that have screwed up his life? I don't understand, you know? I mean, you were a baby. Nobody cares, you know? It's not like you're it's not like you're an adult and they show you naked and stuff.
Right, and does everyone know who he is?
Exactly.
Like, if he walked into a store, I wouldn't know that he was that baby.
Right, exactly, you know?
But I'm curious to hear what he has to say, you know?
Well, he does say that, you know, I mean, it's affected him. Suffered a lifelong damage. From Heaven Is Naked Body on it was a triple diamond selling album, which means probably several million or something.
Yeah, a lot of people had that CD in their house.
Right. Apparently, the people he was with, I don't know if it was parents or guardians, whatever, but they only got $200 for this. And the way he was picked is because he was a friend of the photographer.
Mm.
I mean, the infant's family, okay. So, yeah, his dad was a friend of the photographer and stuff.
Well, why didn't they get a release form or something?
Right, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, you can't blame the Nirvana. I mean, you can blame the father maybe for allowing this, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not like anybody forced anybody with a gun, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, he didn't have a choice.
Right.
So, I mean, that makes sense, but... To come after the estate, I mean, it's your parents should, I mean, something should be in writing. I feel like since I've been producing film, I've realized that so many people neglect to get things in writing.
Right.
And like, I don't know about anyone else, but I've watched enough court TV and like been in situations to know that like things should be in writing. Absolutely. Right. Everything should be in writing. It protects all parties.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I insist on that, too, when I do things in my life. So,
yeah,
there you go. But, you know, I mean, if the guy says he suffered damage, he probably did. I don't know. I don't want to.
Yeah, who are we to say?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to judge him.
My naked child body isn't anywhere except, like, probably in photo albums at my mom's house.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Another story is this woman was fainting at a Target store. And she's 24 years old.
She fainted or she like kept fainting?
She felt she was going to faint.
Okay.
And she told an employee. So they brought her something to drink. They called for medical attention. And she had a stroke when she got to the hospital.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty scary.
24-year-old woman?
Know? Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty scary, huh?
They're getting us younger and younger.
I know. And
yeah, when I was growing up, my parents would always be like, oh, you don't have to worry about that till you're older, till you're older. And it's right. Like now people are having strokes at 24.
Right. You know,
heart attacks in their 30s.
And, you know, I started with a therapist, so I had a little questionnaire and it asked you, you know, if you had a trauma in your life. And I didn't think I did. But then it says, do you did you have a trauma where you keep thinking it's going to happen again? And it makes you afraid. And then I realized my stroke was exactly like that.
Yeah, that's a trauma.
It must have been a trauma for me because
of course
every
it is.
Day I'm worried that it's happening again. We have to pay attention to these things, you know.
The thing is, a lot of times, like especially those who experience traumas, I've found through my journey in healing trauma and like speaking to other people who have trauma that sometimes like we have a tendency to discount what we've been through because it doesn't seem as bad as what somebody else has been through. Right. And like you don't have to have like brutally fought off or fought off a brutal attack or like escaped a rape or have been raped or, you know, something like that, you know, been right. in war to experience trauma. Like there's a lot of things and sometimes trauma can look like things that didn't happen too. Like yeah. it can be neglect. It can be, you know, just, you know, being a child and like being neglected and being like afraid because you're home alone a lot or, you know, like it could be a number of things, you know. And the thing is we really sometimes discount ourselves and the things we've experienced and we don't take it seriously as something that's actually trauma. And that rolls over into judging other people by what we deem is worthy of being labeled as trauma right. for their case too. And the thing is trauma can look like so many things, honestly.
That's true. That's true. And if it scares you and interferes with your life, obviously it had an impact on you, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for today, Jen.
That's it.
Thank you to Doc Farrow for calling in. And
thanks, Doc.
For the fascinating film. Yeah, take care of yourselves. Be safe.
And heal your trauma.
Yeah, whatever. Hopefully nobody else has trauma, but we know better than that.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.